question the voices of resin I hear. Oh, Plastics.
Plastics is an SPE-sponsored podcast. Hi!
Hello, Lindsay!
Look, we're in the same room!
We're in the same room!
So this is our Live from Antech 2024. That's the year it is.
That's the year.
And we are in St. Louis together.
Missouri. Yes.
I had some barbecue. I did the... Is that... That's St. Louis.
There's St. Louis okay. barbecue, yeah.
Okay, then I did the... Check the box.
Yeah.
So we are... I'm Lindsay.
I'm Mercedes. And with our powers combined, we are Plastics.
And also...
How did we miss it?
Know.
Yeah.
It's fine.
One more time. With our powers combined, we are... Plastics, the voices of resin.
It's us. And we release a podcast the first Friday of every month.
With a special guest.
Super special guest. So you can listen to it anywhere, not on Google Podcasts, because that's going away as of April 2nd.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I use it, so it's a little heartbreaking. But now I'm on Podbean. We'll see how that goes.
Okay.
Right. But we have a super cool guest today. And we have dragged her up from the show floor, and she is super jazzed. We actually even prevented her from eating her lunch.
Yeah, her lunch is in the refrigerator right over there. So
we're going to make this snappy.
She's very hungry, but she's going to do great.
So we have Ellen Lee, the technical leader of additive manufacturing research at Ford Motor Company. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Lindsay. Hi, Mercedes.
Great meeting you, Ellen.
Good meeting you, too.
Thanks for being here, and thanks for sitting in the center of us.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we weren't trying to ignore you. We just don't know how to interview people in person, apparently.
Yeah, it's really coming down on us. So Ellen and I sit on the board of directors together, and so it is...
This for
is
SPE.
For SPE. Mm-hmm. Who sponsors this podcast? So this is your first Antech actually on the board, right?
Yes. Yes. I was on the board last year, but
we weren't in Denver, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. I was like, I feel like... So first question, before we even get to the meat of our conversation here, what are your thoughts on this Antech? How's it being in person and seeing all the talks live?
So the last Antech I was at was... obviously before COVID, since I missed last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been great seeing talks live, the interaction with all of the attendees as well. It's great. And so far, the talks I've been to have been really great.
I mean, honestly, I love nothing more than a talk while I can have a snack. And you can't do that, you know, just any old time. If you're in person and there's snacks outside and there's a talk, I can do it.
Is it not easier to do virtually, to snack while you're like...
It probably is, but I'm not buying the snacks. The snacks are on the house.
Oh, I love a free snack.
Free snack.
Food always tastes so much sweeter.
That's the key part.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that, I just wanted to know. So,
okay. Well, yeah, moving on.
Moving on to the important stuff.
So, Ellen, can you share your journey in additive manufacturing, how you became a technical leader at Ford?
Yeah, so my journey with additive manufacturing has been relatively short compared to some. I just started into additive about 10 years ago, but I've been at Ford working in the plastics industry for 25 years now. And so when I first started at Ford, I was working in areas developing in the research organization, developing novel materials for automotive use cases that were either higher performance or more sustainable. So I focused on things like polymer clay nanocomposites, as well as natural fiber reinforced composites, looking at bio-based resins and so forth. And one of the things, regardless of what the material development was, one of the big challenges that we always faced was once you develop those materials and compound the materials, do some injection molding, and do your basic characterization, the stage of getting to test and validate the performance at the component level and then the assembly level was always a challenge because, we don't typically make or mold our parts. Our suppliers do that for us. And so either we need to break into production or we need to have a tool cut or something like that to really understand all of the influences of the processing and so forth for those parts. And so, you know, I had started hearing about additive manufacturing, even though, you know, it's been around for, you know, decades. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if I could just 3D print this new material and into the geometry that I would need, mm-hmm. and then test that? I didn't know much about additive.
In theory, wonderful.
And so then I started to dig in, and we had several, you know, global printing facilities, you know, doing all of our prototyping, since we've been, you know, doing that for over 30 years now. We have that capability. And I started to learn more and more about, you know, what 3D printing is and what the capabilities are, and I quickly learned that my initial idea was not very well informed. But then I started to realize, you know, there's a huge potential for additive manufacturing, not just for prototyping, but beyond prototyping, or even just like functional prototyping, where we could maybe start to create transfer functions for printed parts that then you could, you know, relate to what a molded part in the same material would be like, and so forth. And the more I dug in, the more I realized there are a lot of technology gaps, especially in materials. And I like to think of myself as a material girl.
Love it. Very Madonna.
So I like got really geeked out about it and, you know, learned all that I could, started getting involved in like some of the conferences and networking and so forth. And so at that time, about maybe a year and a half or so into, you know, my first idea, I started talking with folks with internally and externally, and, you know, put together a strategy and stood up our first kind of additive manufacturing research program. And in that time, you know, started thinking about roadmaps and what the technical capabilities were at the time and where we should get to be able to realize some of these potential opportunities. So not long after, I was made a technical special or technical leader in that area. And here we are today.
And here we are.
It's sort of funny that you mentioned, you know, the lack of materials knowledge in the world of additive manufacturing. I just had a flashback that I would like to share with you. I was at a trade show several years ago, and they had like this 3D wing. And I saw this, I mean, I think it was probably like some low durometer TPU. And I was like, oh, I went up to the salesperson. I said, what is this? Like, what material is this? He said very proudly, it's our proprietary product. It's called resin.
Dear sir, thank you.
I like to,
I was like,
share,
but what kind of resin? What kind of resin?
I like to share something similar that at Ford, a lot of our product development, you know, they're focused on the applications, right, and they're experts in, you know, making those things work. And sometimes when you go, there's an issue or you're looking at a new product, and I'll always ask if it's, you know, a plastic or a composite, what material is this? And the joke is that it's SKP, some kind of plastic.
Oh, SKP.
I like that. I'm like going to use that.
Yeah.
It's going to branch out now. That could have been what that TPU so that part was. That resin, yeah. Sorry, that resin part could have been an SKP.
SKP.
I do love that you know, bring up the fact that, you know, your initial thought is like, oh, I'll just print it and it'll be fine in the injection molded, like, process. That's an easy one-to-one, because I think that idea is kind of slowly starting to, you know, dissolve a little as we all learn a little bit more. But, you know, I know you're not the only person that thought that. Like, I thought that, like, so many times I've had this conversation and people be like, yeah, you could just print it and then you could test it in injection molding. And it's like, oh, the difference.
So many.
I could get you a whole book on the differences. Yeah. And, you know, to actually have to worry about that development between those two processes, I think that takes a lot of next stepping. Mm-hmm.
People are always asking, like, oh, can this is made out of SKP? This is made out of polypropylene. Can you print polypropylene? And yes, now you can. Right. Back then, there weren't polypropylene materials available for printing. But, you know, then, as we know, there's many different grades of polypropylene, let alone the, you know, the influence of the processing. And so, you know, it's like, yes, we can, but that's not going to solve your problem necessarily.
Right. I could just make this look cool. Like, is that good? So, you know, as we talked about, you've been super instrumental in developing Ford's strategy with the technical roadmaps for additive manufacturing. Looking forward, you know, thinking how far you've come already, looking forward, what does that look like for the automotive sector in the next decade? Like, where does that go?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, besides a billion different options, but what's your opinion on that?
So there, we kind of went through this like Gardner hype cycle within Ford as well with additive. Like everyone was crazy about additive.
Right.
It's like huge. We got to do everything. And
it's like Hansel. It's so hot right now.
It's so hot.
So we started, you know, doing quite a bit and then realizing, oh, this is very hard, especially for automotive. So,
and what type of 3D printing or additive manufacturing were you doing?
Many different types. So I think where we are today, based on the big challenges, so the challenge.
There we go.
The opportunity.
Additive manufacturing for automotive is that, you know, we have very strict requirements for performance mm-hmm. and durability. We have very, very high volumes
mm-hmm.
for if we want to make a big impact. And right. for most of our vehicles, especially the ones where we would want to utilize
right.
all the benefits. And we have very long, the lifetimes goes hand in hand with the durability. But we have very low margins, right? Like
mm-hmm.
we are very well known for beating up our suppliers for like...
As someone who has been on the supplier end of it, yes.
Sorry. And so that combination makes it really tough.
Mm.
And so, you know, within the additive manufacturing industry, when we talk about like all these use cases, we often work, you know, across different industries like aerospace or consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So aerospace like us, they also have very high level of requirements and very long life cycles. Like they need the durability.
Fair.
But, you know, often price is not as much an issue to get that level of performance.
That's mm-hmm. true. I could see that. I'm not buying my own airplane, but I sure as heck want it to last like I'm buying my own airplane.
Yeah, you don't want a plug to pop out of the
door.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
So consumer goods, you know, they have very high volumes as well. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times those things that you might be printing, you know, they only need to live
right.
a year or less maybe. And they really the consumers really desire personalization, which mm-hmm. is like a big use case for additive manufacturing.
Right.
And then like when we compare to the medical industry, they have a huge need for personalization
mm-hmm.
for certain aspects, right? And their volumes are low because of the personalization needs, and so they'll pay for
right.
for those benefits. And so we're kind of in this like the toughest category.
You picked all the worst ones to yeah. go against. Got it.
So I think it turns out that it's a lot harder than we initially thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
We have had many wins, but we are a little bit at the mercy of what the technology readiness level is
mm-hmm.
within the mm-hmm. the value chain. Right. So within 10 years, though, so far we have implemented a couple of production applications, and we continue to have those in very low volume. So we work very closely with our Ford Performance organization, so they do things like the F-150 Raptor, where
mm-hmm.
it's much lower volume than the F-150, which is millions of trucks. And we do like certain, you know, performance packages for the Bronco, for example. And so there's a lot of kind of customization type things that we are
That's
continuing
cool.
to pursue. So it's there are some fits that have a good business case now. But I think my dream is like to crack that big nut, to get to scaled production where you can design for additive and get all the benefits and, you know, not immediate benefits for maybe that cost, but have these second and third order costs like David Tucker was talking about yesterday
right.
Through implement AM.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, we're also really benefiting from additive in not necessarily just parts on our vehicles, but in the manufacturing. So we get lots of business efficiencies through improving our manufacturability, our assembly line, and you know some of our components line, where we can make manufacturing aids with 3D printing. We can do lighter weight grippers or lift assists. So in some of these cases where we print things that go on end of arm tooling, for example, we can go to smaller robots, and then that helps save money and improves the kinematics, improving quality and things like that. So we're doing a lot of that right now today and seeing a lot of benefits for that. But it's kind of transparent to
Right.
Yeah, I wonder with the scalability, you know, I'm surprised that I haven't seen, you know, obviously it's taken off a lot in over the past 10 years, right? But I'm kind of disappointed that I haven't seen designers really take advantage of the opportunities to design specifically for additive manufacturing, because there are structures that you can do in additive manufacturing that you can't do in any other process. And it's like, you could, it's not even an injection molding, right? And I wonder, do you think that as it continues to grow and maybe overtake some parts of other processes, do you think that we'll start to see that?
Yeah, so that's one of, you know, I already told you I'm biased. Materials is like a big challenge, I think, in the industry. But one of the other big challenges is to understand design for additive manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are a lot of designers in manufacturing companies that have been trained in the conventional processes and, you know, gets kind of ingrained. But we're starting to see more and more training and education from the incoming workforce. Like today's college graduates, even in high school, a lot of people are familiar with additive manufacturing and are starting to kind of really put that in their toolbox as well, as you know, understanding you know the how to design for that process. So I think it'll change slowly, but kind of retraining the engineers, the designers who have been using these other processes for so long will take some time to kind of switch your mindset about how to do so. But like, I think one of the big advantages is, you know, potentially you could consolidate parts, right, to create those things that you can't print or you can't mold, for example. And a lot of times things are molded in several parts and then assembled because of those constraints.
Right.
So one of the challenges is then, you know, often the way that we're set up, there's these silos. So you might be able to combine the function of a single part by, you know, taking components from maybe two different assemblies, but they fit together, right? But then
Now you're messing
with how the silos are set up, right? So I think there are some kind of infrastructural constraints as well that makes it a little bit hard to think holistically from the systems point of view. So yeah, it's a challenge.
Many challenges.
I mean, opportunity. It's quite an opportunity.
And I, you know, you mentioned like younger kids, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, they're all starting to like know what additive manufacturing is coming in. And like my go-to gift for little kids is always the 3D printed pen.
Oh, right.
Because I'm like, let's just get you talking about this. And I think it's funny because, you know, even back when I was in school 15 years ago, you know, we were talking about how there were a lot of engineers out there that didn't know how to design for injection molding. And now it feels like the flip is already quickly moving from like, okay, there were the people that don't know how to design for injection molding. Now it's like, oh, you also, we got to learn this new thing. I know 15 years is kind of a long time, but still, you know, the fact that now like the people I graduated with, we're going to be the grumpy people being like, we know how to design for injection molding. I don't need to design for additive
manufacturing. Back in my day.
It's injection molding only. And it's funny to see that flip happen, what feels like very quickly, but it's true. Like I guarantee nobody's talking about that in schools yet. Maybe talking about it casually, but not, there's no modules on it. I would be very impressed if a school is teaching that. And if someone's teaching that, let us know.
Colleges.
They are. Teaching. Okay. Well, yeah. I've been out of the game.
But it is, it's tough because when people talk about 3D printing or additive manufacturing, they talk about it like it's one thing. Mm-hmm. And the different additive processes are quite different from one another. Mm-hmm. So, true. Obviously there's different aspects of injection molding that have different design rules
right.
that you could work around, but they have a lot of similarities.
Right.
In additive, there are some that are very different from one another.
Right.
So the design for each of the additive processes is going to be quite different.
So, teach the module, and then the subset, and the subset, and the subset.
Yeah. And for the materials design, too. I mean, my gosh. I have two. I have a filament FET at home, and then I have an LCD, just like a little Mars Elegoo. I never thought about that, about the actual material design behind the raw materials.
Yeah.
Just completely different for the different processes.
Yeah,
I'm a materials girl.
I feel left out.
Oh, you're a materials girl. You got your first 3D printer, didn't you?
I did. I just haven't put it together. It's in a box.
Yeah.
I'm working on it. Collaboration is kind of a key theme in your work, especially if you're trying to steal parts from other silos to get stuff done. So you've partnered with suppliers and universities. How do these collaborations kind of contribute to Ford's additive manufacturing strategy? Where does that go?
That's a great question. So we depend on collaborating with the value chain because most OEMs, automotive OEMs, we're assemblers, mm-hmm. right? So we're not making those parts. And so if we want to embrace additive manufacturing for specific types of applications, we need to have close relationships with that supply chain. And so I think one is kind of developing the supply chain to understand additive and to understand what is what there's incentives for in that in the supply base, right? So both the technical side and the business side of what the state of the supply, mm-hmm. the industry is in additive really helps us to understand what timing we can expect to develop those roadmaps towards using additive for different opportunities. So, but it's been interesting in additive because the additive industry and the automotive industry have not been, they're not overlapping Venn diagrams, except for in prototyping for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, the question had been early on, do we take our automotive supply base and teach them additive? Or do we take the additive supply
That's
base
what I was wondering.
And teach them automotive?
Uh-huh.
And it's
both are hard to
both are really
do
hard.
Because I know as a former automotive supplier, it's a hard, set of standards you have to adhere to, but
right.
what do you
do? The automotive supply base does things a certain way.
Right.
And so if you want to get into it, we expect you to do some of these things.
Right.
And if you're new, you're like, oh, really? We got to do that.
Yeah. Right. Sure. And I would imagine from a supplier standpoint, it's hard. I don't know if it's difficult for you guys to get their attention specifically with additive manufacturing. But I know, on the masterbed side, it's just, there aren't a lot of companies that focus on it because it just feels like such a smaller market than the other forms of molding.
Mm-hmm.
But how has it been? How's it been working with your suppliers? Right. Which direction did you go? A little bit of both?
We're doing a little bit of both. So the interesting thing is there's a big, value chain and additive
mm-hmm.
to support prototyping mm-hmm. parts. Mm-hmm. There are service bureaus everywhere that have several different types of additive manufacturing and they make parts. But normally they only need to make one of each kind of part ever, right?
Mm. Right.
So the interesting thing part, it has been how do you know what the performance of that part is? Or if you had to make a second of those parts or a millionth of that part,
right.
is it going to be the same?
Yeah.
They don't have any, now Right. Some of them are starting to. But like in the early, very early days, like none of them knew how repeatable their process was or their material was or the, you know.
It's like the Wild West.
Yeah. So it's been interesting. Like one time one of these supply service bureaus said like, oh, we have great like uptime. Like this this printer is like up 60% of the time or something. It's like 60%. You got to get to like 99% to be able to.
You're like, that's nothing.
Yeah, I don't know. I have questions about it. You know, there's a way to go to become, you know, an automotive supplier. So it's been really interesting. But on the other hand, you know, this design for additive has been really challenging, and there's, you know, for people to like change their mindset. So kind of teaching the automotive supply base all of that.
Which some of them are the ones that did not want to design for injection molding, I can tell you that much.
Right, yeah.
I mean, there's some long established suppliers that are probably very, you know, content with the way they run their business and supply to the automotive industry. And I'm sure some of them are starting to see the writing on the wall and see that, you know, additive would be a good play to, you know, keep in their playbook. But that would be very interesting to see some of those companies incorporating additive manufacturing for that purpose.
So, Ellen, you are on the board of directors for SPE, as with Lindsay, and you're also on the board for additive manufacturing and 3D printing. So how do these roles influence your work at Ford and your perspective on the industry?
I think it's really good to see the overall perspective of what's going on in the industry, where what technologies are being developed, both in plastics in general, as well as in the additive industry for polymer additive, to kind of gauge, you know, what's important, what the technologies are, and then pull in the ones that make sense for us to add them to our technical roadmaps. And again, like I said previously, it helps us determine what the timing should be, when we should expect to be able to, you know, utilize some of these technologies. But we also, you know, it allows me to engage more closely with different members of those organizations, like SPE in general, as well as the additive membership, to understand what they're looking for, you know, as from the customer point of view, the downstream customer for vehicles, right? What do they want from their vehicles? So it's a good perspective. You know, cars are something that everybody knows about. Everyone has, at least if not owning a vehicle or driving a vehicle, has been in a vehicle and has opinions one way or another about what
always
they want,
got opinions,
what they don't want. So you know, and it's an easy topic to talk about. Everybody knows about cars to some extent, right? So nice icebreaker to find out, you know, people's ideas.
Did you utilize 3D Natives before their relationship with SPE?
I was aware of them. They have a good online presence to look for, you know, what's new in additive. There are some resources there that are very good. There are a couple of those types of formats or forums or companies that have that kind of thing, and I did use a lot of them just to search for information.
Right.
So it's great. Their focus had been previous to being part of SPE was more in Europe, so it allowed us to probe more of what's going on in Europe,
and then
some of these other online forums, you know, focus more on what's going on in North America.
And how is that comparison, like Europe versus U.S.? You know, I know, like, sometimes it's like, oh, it's trendy in Europe, so it's becoming here.
Is it like recycling? They're so much better than
is, like, is it, you know, different? Is it staged like that? Or is it, you know, kind of the world learning together?
I think early on there was a little bit of that. You know, Europe seemed to have a lot of the metal additive know-how. A lot of the kind of polymer additive was based in North America, like the big players like Stratasys.
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
And 3D Systems. And Asia was kind of in the very early days, very, you know, very few companies and know-how. And the Asia market has like exploded very quickly and accelerated in developing good machines and technologies. And they, like, one of the big challenges that we have is figuring out the business case, right? And a lot of the big drivers for what the business case is how expensive the materials are. Part of that is economies of scale.
Right.
But part of it is there's only a certain number of suppliers for those types of materials. And a lot of those suppliers are the equipment OEMs who, you know, had this razor and blade model or printer.
Yeah, it was the, I remember when I was like, oh gosh, this is gar-. I used to manage a printing company and I was like, oh, I hate this model. I hate it.
But once a lot of the Asian machine manufacturers came online, they tended to be more open. They had lower cost machines and they were open systems. And so they've grown quite a bit. There are some regional differences, but now a little less so between like Europe and North America.
Okay, so they're not getting the cool stuff first, necessarily. I don't know. I just get jealous.
So, Ellen, what advice would you give to young professionals looking to pursue a career in additive manufacturing or polymer research?
Well,
be a materials girl. Yeah, I think that's always advice we can give out.
Well, I think it first take a little bit of soul searching. What do you really love to do? Mm. And if it turns out it's materials or polymers or printing, figure out exactly what aspect of that.
Mm.
And then start attending, you know, networking sessions or these go to conferences. But don't be afraid to reach out to somebody. Either through networking or LinkedIn or something like that, and ask for exactly what you want.
I think that's so smart because I think it took me a long time to start asking people. And then once you do, you start realizing, like, people are like, yeah, I can help you. Yeah. Like, absolutely,
people
I'll do this.
People want to help.
Yeah.
People want to make connections.
You've gotten so bold with it, now you just tell them. You're like, you need to help me with this. Come here. You need to do this. You need to sponsor this for me. You need to teach me how to do this.
I ask the people I don't necessarily know. But if I know you, we're past the polite asking. here's my demand. You have 48 hours. But yeah, like, I think that's really good advice.
Because
I know coming into this industry, like, I didn't want to ask anyone or anything. And John Meckley, who just had the recently endowed scholarship, like, he used to, I remember he told me he wanted to get me an internship. And he's like, I'll just call this guy and ask. And I was like, can you do that? And he's like, yes, I will do that, Lindsay. Like,
I just said I would.
We do this. It's just, I think it seems so obvious to us, and I would argue not obvious to students coming into the industry.
But getting over the fear, I mean, I think we still go through it, right? I mean, like, obviously you served with Ellen on the board, and when we talked about getting you for this episode.
Great example.
Yeah.
I was very, because I find your whole, you know, you are the coolest person I have been affiliated with, and I didn't want to ask you for an interview. Also true, but I didn't know if you'd want to do an episode. And so I, you know, asked someone else and then was just told, just go ask her.
And she asked Sue to ask you, I think. Yeah.
Well, Sue said I should ask you. And then as soon as I asked you, you were like, yes. And it's like, well, why didn't I just ask her?
Yeah. I think, you know, getting over your fear of asking people for help or asking questions, you know, even if you think it's a dumb question, more often than not, other people had the same question and were afraid to ask, right? They're just happy that 100%. Somebody asked it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and no one's going to be like, well, that's a stupid question.
You know? Right. Not to your face anyway.
Definitely not to your face.
Not to your face. And that's all you need. If you can ride high off of that, that's fine. Yeah.
And generally people do want to help.
Mm-hmm. Right? I think you're absolutely right.
So making those connections is the most important thing.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, kind of summarizing this, you know, we've talked about what you are doing it forward and what you see as the future in like the automotive sector. But are there any like emerging trends or technologies in additive manufacturing? Maybe not necessarily something you can do, but you're like, man, if I could pull that in, that would be sweet. That you have your eye on or just think are cool coming up?
Oh, so many things. So one of the things that, well, let me back up a little bit. So a lot of people, when they think of additive, think of filament printing, mm-hmm. material extrusion.
Right.
It's kind of the easiest to kind of grasp onto.
Right.
Especially if you already work in plastics, I think.
It's the closest in terms of like the materials that you're able to extrude or make, create with. But it does have several limitations. One is, and I think everyone is familiar with, this layering creates weakness across those layers, right? You don't get really good adhesion across. And, you know, in conventional polymer processing, we've known this forever through even just weld lines, which are stronger than right. interlayer lines.
They're a little more squishy.
So often we are just designing those material extrusion parts to the lowest properties, like of, you know, whatever the Z strength is across those lines. And so the properties are very anisotropic, right? Like you can get really great, especially when you talk about composite materials, fiber-reinforced materials, mm-hmm. you can get like really good performance along that direction, but not across the direction. Mm-hmm. You're just looking at resin properties.
You get a heck of a wall.
So why not, instead of like dealing with the weakness, exploit the weakness or the anisotropy and align your load path with the print path or the tool path. Mm-hmm. Right? You can align the fibers in the direction where the load you need is in, right? But for that, you would need to have out-of-plane printing capability. You're not just printing layer by layer.
Right.
You can like follow a contour or reinforce, you know, across something like with ribs. So being able to have that capability to plan out what your tool path is to do that would be excellent.
Bananas.
Right? It'd be great. But that, like, it sounds hard, but it turns out it's even harder than you think.
Really?
Because when you design the part, you can like design the geometry, and then like typically you can even do design for additive, and then you slice the parts. But now if you're talking about like printing out of plane, having motion that's out of plane, you're not slicing, right? Like, and if you open up all the degrees of freedom,
right.
You don't even have shells necessarily.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just that you don't have planar slices, you don't have shells, you can do whatever you want, right? So like, you could go this way here, and then you could go across here, and you could skip a layer. You know, you're printing where you need to have the, you know, the load carried.
It sounds like it should be pretty possible, just, but the thinking about the code for it just makes me nauseous.
It's a hard no for me.
So it's like you need to be able to optimize what that geometry looks like, mm-hmm. as well as what that tool path is.
It's like you almost have to incorporate like an ANSYS type software into what you're designing already.
Yeah,
I mean, it feels like you could use AI to make it easier.
You know what? Let's just solve it.
Yeah.
AI.
That could be. We should just ask.
Just add AI into our conversation.
We should just ask ChatGPT to do it for us.
There you go. Yeah. Done.
Done.
We solved your problem. You're welcome.
Thank you.
So, okay. Well, we can't do that. but that does sound really, that would be really cool to see stuff, you know, kind of build on like the existing technology and be like, here's this thing and now here's this thing and it's strong, or here's this thing and it's strong and it's functional. Like,
I mean, that's proud. It's kind of blowing my mind because that's really like we're talking about designing for additive manufacturing, but this is like taking it to a whole new level when you're actually designing, you know,
the a lot direction. Of times, and they, you use this kind of concept or workflow for conventional manufacturing as well, but typically you can do like a topology optimization for a part where you put in your constraints, where the load are, where the attachment points are, etc. And you'll go through this optimization where it'll tell you where you need material to have a functioning part. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time if it's for injection molding, then you go in and you apply the constraints for unmolding and the drafts, angles, and things like that, and it'll modify that design. You can do the same thing for additive manufacturing, casting, stamping, all of those things. But that often will assume isotropic properties, right? They're just saying you need material here, here, and here, right? And then, but then like for injection molding, there's a lot more you need to do to kind of tweak and optimize based on like if you're fiber reinforced, you want to make sure that the fibers are in the right areas and the right orientation, et cetera, especially if you're looking at like long fiber materials. So you can do the same thing for additive, but now you are removing some of the constraints. So now you're like, oh, but I could print, you know, this way or that way. So you almost need to have an iterative, like, here's how I'm designing, but here's how I can move to, like, have a continuous print pattern.
Right.
And kind of go back and forth. So you need to do those steps at the same time, kind of, or very quick iterations.
Or you need AI
to
do it at the same time. Well, that's awesome. Well, I think we are just about out of time. And so we wildly appreciate you being here. And I'm going to thank myself for getting the courage to ask you.
Good job, Lindsay. Thank you.
And we love hearing about all this stuff. And thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for doing what you're doing.
Yes. So cool.
I do have one message for the plastics folks.
Let's do it.
Like a lot of times you have you hear hesitancy from those injection molders or other
jerks,
other people in the supply chain, because they're like, oh, additive manufacturing. Why would I want to do that and take away from injection molding, for example? And that's one of the misconceptions. It's just another tool. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some things are best made by stamping. Some are best made by thermoforming. Some injection molding. It depends on what you need from that part. So one of my good friends in additive has said, when you get a hammer, you don't throw out your screwdriver.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just something else that's in your toolbox that you can look at. So don't be afraid to embrace additive. And people are starting to look at hybrid technologies where you can combine some of these things. So, you know, I don't want that misconception to the SPE audience that, like, you know, is taking away from any other, you know, known process.
It's not taking away. It's only adding.
It's adding.
It's adding.
It's not supportive.
That's perfect. Perfect way to end. Well, Dr. Ellen Lee, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and for taking time out of your very busy schedule at Antech come up to the 20th floor with us. That's right.
Oh,
no.
So much fun. So thank you so much for
having me. Hey, thanks so much for listening to Plastics. New episodes appear on the first Friday of every month. So either follow or subscribe to get those new episodes ASAP. Plastics, the Voices of Resin, is a plastics podcast sponsored by SPE, Inspiring Plastics Professionals. If you want to find out more about SPE, please visit SPE.org.
Oh, Plastics.